Welcome to People, Places, Planet Pod, the official podcast of the Environmental Law Institute, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization working to ensure a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on the rule of law.
Welcome to this week's episode of People, Places, Planet. I'm your host, Sarah Backer. In this week's episode, we are going to talk about green startups and their role in the transition to a sustainable economy. So first off, what is a green startup? A green startup is a for-profit startup company in which a key focus of their business is advancing sustainability. For example, you may have seen Bowery Farming's lettuce in the produce aisle at your local grocery store. Bowery Farming, a New York-based vertical farming business, is an example of a green startup that is pioneering agricultural solutions and helping the economy become more sustainable. Green startups face unique legal and policy challenges. And today I am joined by Jesse Lazarus, associate attorney with the Energy and Climate Solutions practice of Wilson Sonsini, to explore the legal and policy solutions that may enable green startups to thrive. Jesse, thanks so much for joining me to discuss your article, Dismantling Roadblocks to a Sustainable Transition, which was published in the January 2024 issue of ELR.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, can you start by explaining what the sustainable economy might look like in the future?
I think it's helpful to go back to an earlier definition from a UN commission back in the 1980s, which defined sustainable development as development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. More simply put, how do we as humans live well in the present without threatening the ability of humans to also live well in the future? And so now, what are some of the most significant threats to humans living well in the future caused by how we currently live? Well, the climate crisis and related ecological crises, pollution of the air that we breathe and the water that we drink, mass extinction of species that are critical to our ecosystems that we rely on, and noting that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has concluded that to avert catastrophic health impacts, the world must limit temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So a sustainable economy is one in which humans can live well in the present in a way that, at the very least, doesn't cause those threats, but rather averts them and allows humans to also live well in the future. How does an economy satisfy that criteria? I think in some ways we have a pretty good idea of how an economy does that. We know that we need to transition from relying on fossil fuels to clean energy sources, solar, wind, nuclear, for our electricity and our heat. We know that we need to rely less on animal-based products for our food and more on plant-based. But I think that in other ways, we're still figuring this out. And there also are multiple paths. That is that there are multiple ways for an economy to satisfy that criteria.
So how are green startups salient to this process?
One way of thinking about it is that some of the largest companies of tomorrow are likely to come from today's most successful startups. We've seen this with the rise of household brands such as Amazon, Alphabet, formerly Google, and Meta, formerly Facebook, all founded within the last couple of decades, but which grew to become some of the largest global companies. If today's most successful startups become tomorrow's largest companies, it's then important that the most successful startups are sustainable. And another way of thinking about it is asking where the change needed for our economy to transition to a sustainable economy is most likely to occur. On the one hand, large businesses, many of them have been very important drivers of our transition. We've seen this with the Clean Energy Buyers Alliance, which has been an incredible force for demand for clean electricity. But on the other hand, there is a limit to which a number of large businesses may be able to adequately transition their business models from business models that rely on products and services and operations that are not sustainable to ones that are adequately sustainable. Much of that transition will need to come from the rise of these new green startup companies.
How did you become interested in this topic?
So in my second year at Stanford Law School, a professor, Buzz Thompson, actually, I heard that he was looking for a student to do a directed research project on this topic. And given that this has been a career-long interest for me, trying to thoughtfully have as much impact as I can to drive the growth of the sustainable economy to better address the climate crisis, I jumped at the opportunity. And when Buzz first described this to me, he described how he envisioned having multiple rounds of primary research. And that is that there would be an initial round consisting of interviews and surveys of the CEOs of green startups, of senior law firm partners that are experienced in advising them, and also senior staff at nonprofit legal aid groups, pro bono counsel and pro bono staff at law firms. So in this first round, the goal would be to identify what the most critical legal challenges facing green startups are. And then that would be followed by a second round of primary research of focus groups, one with the CEOs of green startup companies, and then one with senior law firm partners, law firm pro bono staff and pro bono counsel. And these two focus groups would then, reflecting on the findings of the first round of primary research, brainstorm possible solutions to those challenges.
What challenges did you identify in your research?
So the legal policy challenges that we found fall into two major categories. First is substantive legal and policy challenges facing green startups. And the second is challenges related to providing green startups with affordable, discounted, and/or pro bono legal help.
Great. Let's start with the first category. What kinds of substantive legal and policy challenges do green startups face?
The first of these challenges in this category is essentially greenwashing. Some green startups said that there was a lack of really any sustainability standards and certifications and labels. Other green startups described how they were industries where there are green standards and certifications, but these can be easy for non-green competitors to game and to greenwash. One CEO described how they're in a space where there are standards, but that it's relatively easy for companies to selectively apply criteria to assess themselves. And it's very difficult to actually validate their claims.
Wait, so why does it matter for green startups that there are no green standards?
Well, it matters because that is a key part of their value add. Essentially, there is a significant premium that consumers are willing to pay for sustainable products and services, and that investors are willing to pay for sustainable companies.
Jesse, can you tell us more about the second challenge in this category?
So the second challenge is about how you have outdated regulatory frameworks that are slow to recognize, often even the very existence of new sustainable technology, and they are held back by incumbent influence in this regard. So for some green startups, they're developing this technology where it's first in kind. And so there aren't safety standards to assess their technology. And really, what green startups have to do when they have this first in kind technology is they have to play what I would call a short game and a long game. Starting with the long game, some companies described how they would have to develop their own safety standard to assess the safety of their technology. And then they would have to then go to global standards institutes to get them to adopt that standard for assessing their technology. After going to the right global standards institutes, only then would they turn to U.S. regulators to try and convince them to then adopt that standard to assess the effectiveness of their technology. But that process can take a very long time, and investors can lose patience over the slow pace of policymaking. So in the meantime, green startup CEOs often had to play the short game, and that is looking at the array of existing standards, none of which quite fit for their new green technology, but they have to choose the one that's most beneficial to them and then try and convince regulators to apply that to their technology. One green food startup CEO who mentioned how they were operating out of the facilities of a different company, of an incumbent, for no other reason than that the current regulatory framework didn't recognize the existence of their technology. they mentioned how, as part of operating under this existing regulatory framework of the incumbent food industry, that they're forced to comply with safety standards, reporting obligations, and other requirements that are completely irrelevant to their new sustainable food products. And so even while having the same regulatory burdens, perhaps even more significant because they're a smaller company and they're having to comply with these irrelevant requirements, they actually receive fewer resources and less attention than their competitors do. You'll have certain benefits from the government, resources, financing, tax benefits, but those are designed with incumbent industries in mind. And so they won't qualify for those benefits.
Thanks, Jesse. So what is the third challenge?
So the third challenge is about incorporating as a social enterprise. And so a social enterprise can be defined as, I'm taking the definition of the Association of Pro Bono Counsel, any for-profit business venture that seeks to produce both financial as well as positive social and or environmental returns. And there's unprecedented interest from green startups in incorporating as social enterprises. Part of that is because if you incorporate as one of the forms of a social enterprise, you can reduce the risk of liability for pursuing sustainable impact at the expense of profits. Another motivating reason is that green startup can better verify their sustainable impact. And this is important for receiving the benefits of that premium from consumers and investors. But also it's important for attracting employee talent. But the challenge lies in the fact that there is widespread misunderstanding as to the legal effects of these social enterprises, not only among green startups, but also among the attorneys that advise green startups on these social enterprise forms. And that can be a significant obstacle because there are a wide array of different kinds of social enterprise forms. Even among the leaders in social enterprise law, there are unresolved questions given the lack of case law precedent for this space.
Thank you, Jesse. So now let's move to the second category of challenges that you identified in your article.
The second category of critical legal and policy challenges for green startups is challenges that relate to providing green startup companies with affordable legal help. In particular, it's about law firms and green startup companies thinking about what combination of discounted deferred fee legal help and or pro bono legal help to offer green startups. And this also becomes especially important when we think about the longer timelines for commercialization of many important sustainable technology, when we think about hard infrastructure like clean energy technology, as opposed to the shorter timelines for commercialization of more traditional technology ventures, such as software companies like Facebook. If they have longer timelines to commercialization, then this challenge of how do they afford legal help becomes even more important. And there's significant debate among law firms on the topic of should for-profit companies even receive any form of pro bono legal help. The Association of Pro Bono Counsel, ABCO, they have a whole set of criteria for when a for-profit company should and should not qualify for pro bono legal help. But even then, there remains heated debate among law firms about whether or not for-profits should ever receive pro bono legal help. And some law firms say we're willing to offer significant discounts to green startup companies, including those that are looking to receive venture financing, but we're not willing to offer pro bono to green startup companies that are looking to receive venture financing. Other law firms say we are willing to offer a limited amount of pro bono legal help to even green startup companies that are looking to receive venture financing. And green startup companies, they might find themselves that there are some forms of legal help that they can afford, but there are other issues that are especially burdensome. And when we think about the regulatory issues, given that, as we've discussed, green startup companies face these outdated regulatory frameworks, such that for some of those issues, receiving that legal help pro bono might be essential to the viability of that green startup company and might help us accelerate the transition to a sustainable economy. So hopefully that provides you with some sense of the challenges that green startup companies face in trying to afford legal help and that law firms face in trying to decide what combination of deferred fee legal help, discounted legal help, and pro bono legal help that they are willing to offer green startup companies.
Great. I know we can't speak to them in depth, but I would love it if you could tell us a little bit more about the recommendations that you offer in your article.
I would say that my recommendations fall into three themes. The first is about advancing the practice of social enterprise law. The second is about building new coalitions. And the third is about expanding pro bono legal help. So for the first theme of recommendations, I mentioned how there is widespread misunderstanding among not only Green Startup CEOs, but also among practicing attorneys themselves about social enterprise law. So I think it's important that law schools and the ABA find a way to address this misunderstanding. Because as law firm partners related, and as Green Startup CEOs themselves also reported, there's been an unprecedented surge in demand for this social enterprise form, and it can offer very important benefits. So one way that law schools can address this misunderstanding is they can not only offer more classes and even clinics that help to train law students, future attorneys, about social enterprise law, but they can also offer mid-career training for attorneys. And if there's demand from their clients, green startups, then it would seem that actually this is also good for the business of these law firms to send their attorneys to upskill themselves, to learn more about this field of law. The ABA actually already has a joint committee on social entrepreneurship and social benefit entities. But I think that the ABA can consider offering more training sessions to better allow attorneys to meet this surge in demand from green startups for social enterprise legal advice. Now, another key obstacle holding back the advancement of social enterprise law is that even among the leading attorneys in this field, there are significant gaps in their ability to advance the space. There are significant unresolved legal issues. And so I think that the ABA could potentially play a role in providing a forum for leading attorneys, for the drafters of state social enterprise statutes, maybe even leading current or former judges, where all these leaders in the space could come together to help resolve some of these issues in social enterprise law, rather than having attorneys try and resolve them in the heat of a deal. Looking at the second theme of recommendations, building new coalitions. So whether to advance sustainable standards, certifications, and labels, or to try and influence regulatory frameworks that, to a large degree, have been captured by incumbent industries, it's important for green startups and their attorneys to think about building new coalitions. And when we think about just the strength of the venture capital industry, and noting that there's a PwC report, I think it was from 2022, that described how more than a quarter of all venture capital funding is going to climate technology, and climate technology falls within our definition of green startups. So there's this large portion of investment dollars from the venture capital industry. This is a especially influential group of investors. And so to the extent that green startup companies can find ways to band together, perhaps they can work with investors who have green startup companies in their portfolios. They can also work with certain accelerators, and they can even find incumbent companies that are their potential customers that stand to benefit from the success of these green startup companies. And so it's important for them to find ways to come together to support stronger regulation of environmental marketing claims, and also to try and advocate for the more rapid adoption of the sustainable technology in regulatory frameworks. And we've seen this too. For instance, there's Elemental Accelerator, and they have a policy lab where they try and help green startups better engage in policy advocacy. So attorneys can work with Elemental, and perhaps other accelerators can adopt or imitate that same model. They can perhaps even band together. And attorneys also become very important in thinking about the legal effects of advocating for a certain policy, but also in helping these coalitions avoid running into antitrust issues. And so the third major theme is about expanding pro bono. There are three ways in which I think that pro bono could potentially be expanded to better allow green startup companies to thrive. One is the scope of pro bono. Another is which groups offer pro bono. And the third is expanding pro bono eligibility. So in terms of the scope, we've discussed the importance of policy advocacy and navigating outdated regulatory frameworks. These are critical areas for green startups. So I think given that, it's important that there's more pro bono legal help in these areas or more pro bono also in policy advocacy. Oftentimes, we've seen lots of more traditional corporate lawyers offering pro bono legal help in things like incorporation and NDAs and also patent lawyers, but more government regulatory teams perhaps getting involved in pro bono. And also even groups that actually aren't attorneys, but might be regulatory consultants, lobbyists, and other policy advocacy groups that don't traditionally support green startups in this way, but can. And when we think about the kinds of pro bono legal help that traditional law firms can offer, it's often corporate legal work, but for litigation, particularly against large incumbent companies, they might get conflicted out. So perhaps environmental nonprofits that engage in litigation, they can better offer litigation support to green startup companies without getting conflicted out. There also are law school clinics. There are a number of law school clinics that actually currently offer pro bono legal help to low-income entrepreneurs, and a number of which also have a particular emphasis on entrepreneurs at startups that have a social and or environmental impact. And law firms can actually welcome this as a way to better train law students in transactional law, which is often lacking in many law school curriculums. And the final area is about eligibility. And that's just that ABCO has its criteria for assessing the pro bono eligibility of for-profit companies. I think that there are two ways in which ABCO should update their criteria. One is to account for origination of funding. So some green startup companies described how, even though they had over $1 million worth of funding, they were actually under obligations because much of that funding came from grants. And the requirements for them to access that grant money was that they could only use a very small percentage of that on legal help. Given that, startup actually appeared much more able to afford legal help than it otherwise was. So I think that ABCO should update its criteria to account for that. Another area is about the funding required for different industries. ABCO assesses the income levels of the individuals that run a business and also the business entity income in determining whether or not that business should qualify for pro bono legal help. In looking at individual income, ABCO already accounts for regional differences in cost of living, acknowledging that the same individual income in one area might actually add up to much less in a different area with a higher cost of living, such that the business that they run might qualify for legal help. By the same logic, acknowledging that certain industries in which green startup companies operate, some of them require much more significant levels of funding, particularly software like Facebook versus companies that are developing hardware, energy technology. Not energy, but a supporting example was there was one sustainable material startup company CEO who described how their pilots would actually cost over $50 million. So that it's important to think about what levels of funding are required for that sort of company to advance and to consider that in determining their eligibility for pro bono.
Why is it important for attorneys and those in the legal profession to help green startups meet the challenges that they face?
It's not just important from an impact perspective, but it's also a significant business opportunity for law firms and for attorneys. It's not just about pro bono, but also about finding, are there other ways that law firms can perhaps come together to offer more favorable discounted legal help, deferred fee legal help, recognizing the sometimes greater challenges that green startups face than non-green startups, and also how important it is for these green startup companies to thrive. And given that, just law firms can perhaps come together to devise a more favorable set of offerings of deferred fee and discounted and pro bono legal help for better allowing green startup companies to thrive. I also think that it's important for law firms, as I mentioned, to recognize this surge in demand for social enterprise related legal advice and to think about how they can better develop their expertise in this.
Well, thanks, Jesse, for being on the podcast today. And for a more in-depth look at the challenges green startups face and some potential solutions, check out Jesse's article, Dismantling Roadblocks to a Sustainable Transition, published in the January 2024 issue of ELR.
Thank you for tuning in to People, Places, Planet Pod, brought to you by the Environmental Law Institute. We would like to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and ideas to podcast@eli.org. And if you're interested in learning more about our work, attending one of our events, reading our publications, or becoming a member, please visit our website at www.eli.org.